Anthony King, co-book writer.
Scott Brown, co-book writer.
And of course, we're here talking Beetlejuice, which is making its world premiere here at National Theater. First of all, just the excitement of doing a world premiere. I know Tina Fey did Mean Girls here, started Across Town, Dear Evan Hansen started here at Arena, and then well, that never really did anything. No.
But, was that
show? Yeah. But actually, I think West Side Story started here, too, way long
ago. Really?
At the National,
Whoa.
Yeah. So just the excitement of audience is seeing something that's completely fresh, and why DC?
I think that tradition you're talking about is a huge part of it. I think DC's become a town where that is open to new shows and being the first audience for a new show, and that's exciting for us as creators to be able to leave, not be in New York, and go to another town that is not the typical Broadway audience and put this show in front of them. It's very exciting.
Yeah. And how did you guys, I mean, we all know the Tim Burton movie. I mean, we grew up on that sucker and can quote it. How do you go, since you wrote the book for the stage, do you start with the screenplay, or, you know, do you just throw that out and start completely fresh, or how do you go about from the writing process?
I mean, what was interesting for us was, you know, going back and watching the movie, because, you know, we grew up with the movie. We're kids of the 80s. We grew up with Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Beetlejuice and Batman and all of Tim Burton's iconography. And, you know, we went back and watched the movie probably for the first time in at least, you know, 10 or 15 years at that point. And what's surprising about it is just how, you know, what a unique story it is, but also how flexible a lot of it is, and how just like there was a lot buried inside it that we felt like we could take out and take in different directions, take characters, take them in different directions, and our producers were extremely supportive of that. And I mean, we're fond of reminding people that Beetlejuice is in the original movie for somewhere between 12 and 14 minutes.
Isn't that crazy?
It's
like the Hannibal Lecter thing. He's barely in it,
yeah,
but he makes
right.
an impact.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. It's very much like that. And the same is true of Lydia, who was the Winona Ryder character in the movie. And those were the elements and the characters that we sort of had a brief to pull out and kind of, you know, recenter the show around. And we had a lot of support from our producers in doing that, which is nice.
Which, so you're talking a lot about, you know, the parts that were flexible and malleable, and I know it sounds like you're saying you expanded those two characters a lot. What are there any other parts in there where you're like, ooh, they should have gone here in the movie, but we're going to bring that out. Are there any other things?
I think the big thing is that in a musical, people break into song. And so you have to have really big emotional reasons for people to do that. And in a movie, you don't have to have such searing emotional things happening in the subtext of the characters. And so that was the biggest change I think we made in adapting the movie, is looking for those core reasons for characters to break into song, that because the movie is very much about two couples fighting over a house. and that's not a big reason to sing. So we had to that's I think the biggest shift we made in writing the book.
Awesome. And there's in the movie there's, you know, this, I mean, the sort of aesthetic of the movie is like based on this goth take on grief and death and that sort of thing, and like, but it left an awful lot of interesting energy under the surface that we could kind of bring out and really engage the subject of death and loss and grief a little bit, especially through the Lydia character.
Yeah, I want to. I mean, I'm going to talk to the composer about the music, and I'll save that for him. But since you guys are the writers, you know, talk to me about sort of a. I mean, you said Lydia's not, surprisingly, not in the movie as much, and Beetlejuice, but what, as writers, what's sort of like Lydia's character arc? Where do you want to bring her from point A to point B throughout the story?
Well, the big shift we made right away was to make Lydia the main character of the show. And in the movie, the Maitlands, the Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis characters are the main characters. So that was the biggest shift, and everything kind of came from that. And so Lydia goes from being, she is still very recognizable from the movie, of this kind of sarcastic, dark, obsessed with death character. But in our show, her mother has recently passed away, and her, the world, she's suddenly kind of realizing that the world's not fair, that adults are terrible, and that
except for the ones in this room right now.
That's right, exactly.
Right.
And
our
she's
kids don't feel that way about us.
That's right, and so she's kind of navigating through all of that, and so it's her journey that toward figuring out how to be alive and what that means. That is what the show's really about.
And Beetlejuice himself is such a bizarre, you know, it's dark, but he's still likable, you know, it's weird, it's that weird, like, line to walk, which I guess works so well for Tim Burton, that's sort of his bag, but for the stage, I mean, there's not many characters like this on the stage, let's say. I mean, this guy is a bizarre creature, but how do you go about walking that line in terms of the dialogue he says, or just his, you know, his character itself, make him where there's a little dark underbelly, but keep him likable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we like him because he is impolite about things that are generally solemn things, like death. I mean, he has no idea what the consequences of death are because he has been dead all his quote-unquote life. he's never been alive in our version, and so there's just like an anti-gravity to him. You know, he doesn't get what life is like for living people, why they waste it, wasted on minutiae and things like that, because he has no sense of consequences. But that's great, because, I mean, like, he's, even though he doesn't understand those things, he's a great pushback against all of the kind of ceremonies and weight of death that we put on death as living people to kind of soften the blow. And he's sweeping all that away. He's that kind of Loki-like force of chaos that can sweep away all the ceremony and all the civilizational falderal and just actually get at the meat of things. But obviously he has a lot to learn. Too.
And I guess just sort of in closing, and as audiences, when we're leaving this, when we see it through that eyes, where let's take away the pomp and circumstance and all the mortal things that we hang on death and everything else, does that help change our perspective and how we view the world?
That's what we're hoping for, is that you leave the show having laughed a lot, but also at least had a little blip of thinking about your own life and where you focus your energy, and are we living life, and as we say, that the message of the show is kind of that life is about the way we connect to other people. And so I think hopefully people leave thinking about that. That seems a very current thing that we need to all be thinking about.
It couldn't hurt.
All right, well, thanks so much for your time. Can we wrap by saying the B word we're not supposed to say?
Should we say it three? I mean,
of course.
It doesn't count unless we say it three times.
Well, that's what I'm going for.
That's right.
Where'd he go?
He's over there.
Is he going to show up if
he's
say
in
it?
An interview?
All right.
Ready?
Right.
Two,
there we go.
Three.
Beetlejuice. Oh, there he is. All right. Thanks, guys.